in front of what Matt Ravis said was 10,000 fans in the Toyota Center. That's a testament to him because he purveyed that excitement to me. That was awesome last night. What a win.
Fantastic. Let's say hello to our man, Matt Ravis. Matt Ravis, exciting night last night in H-Town.
Yeah, where's that rank among the better Thunder basketball games of the past few years? I mean, that was a highly entertaining game.
We could just talk about this season.
Sure, absolutely. That was one of the best this season. Maybe the best this season.
I know latest is the greatest, and so this is my Monday morning, you know, knee-jerk reaction, though it's Tuesday. I feel like that was the best win of the season. Is that crazy? Just given the history between these two franchises, the trade with Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, to be out Steven Adams, who goes down to 2-minute mark, no Nerlens Noel. Mark, you pointed out last hour, there was no rim defense for Oklahoma City whatsoever. Really had no business winning that game. They're down 15, I believe it was, heading into the fourth quarter, and they outscore the Rockets by 21. That was incredible. That was just a wild game. James Harden is imploding in front of our very eyes. Russell Westbrook plays a great game, but then I thought made a boneheaded mistake at the end of the game. He stole that ball. That ball was trying to get to the corner at the end. It looked like they were trying to get it to P.J. Tucker. James Harden was trying to get to P.J. Tucker. Russell Westbrook was playing safety. Forgot that it was basketball, not football. I thought he was picking off a pass. He was not going to be denied the chance to put up the last shot. And it was a terrible, the only three, ironically, of the night for Russell. It was a terrible look. And Oklahoma City's able to pull off the unbelievable once again. That was an awesome win, man. And as great as Chris Paul was in the first half, it's almost non-existent in the second. It was Gallinari, and Dennis Schroeder continues to add to what's been just a fantastic year. I'm putting that at number one this year in a year that's been chock full of big come-from-behind victories.
I think it is number one because of the Rockets and Russell and potential tiebreak element in the playoffs. The other games at Oklahoma City were great to watch, but that one I think probably does go down as number one.
But your boy Lou Dort last night, Mark. That's a bulldog in Frankie. Just go ahead, take that guy out. He was giving James Harden fits.
I'm not sure what's going on with Terrence Ferguson, but there's a chance that he gets Lou Dorted. I mean, if Lou Dort's going to even put back missed shots or do anything offensively, then defensively, I don't think that there's a whole lot of drop off.
Do you see that putback dunk that he had right there at the rim?
I did. I don't think I've seen Terrence Ferguson do that I could ever remember.
Yeah, he was impressive last night. Have we heard any update on Steven Adams? And I agree with what you said last hour. I didn't really get a chance to chime in. Clint Capella to me was just a reckless play. I didn't think it was him trying to injure Steven Adams because I think he kind of hurt himself. But it was reckless, and that's why I thought it was. I believe they called it a flagrant one, which I thought it warranted. But I didn't really think he was trying to take Steven Adams out of the game. I just thought that he, again, was pretty reckless, and the result of it was Steven going down with an ankle injury.
I don't know where he was going. I'm sure, but I still don't know what he was doing. But I can't say that was an intentional act to hurt him.
So, that was pretty scary, though. I mean, all of his weight landed right on Steven Adams' midsection there. So I was thinking, at the very least, you got the wind knocked out of him.
That was not good, man. That was not. No, it wasn't good.
What
I watched.
Sorry, I was just going to ask you, what is the Rockets' highest percentage shot late in games? Is it the James Harden ISO?
It's James Harden drive to me. Yeah, it is.
Because to me, that final possession was a mess. I mean, James Harden didn't know what to do with the ball, and obviously Russell Westbrook standing on top of P.J. Tucker in the corner, which is just a dumb play.
That's just
shockingly low awareness to be standing right on top of your teammate and steal a pass from him. And then meanwhile, James Harden is camped out in the lane. It's just a mess. Just a mess, that final possession.
It was, and that's what, to me, like if you're a Thunder fan or you're the Thunder's organization, you're just laughing, right? Because even though Russell played almost a flawless game, I thought he was great. He made just an unbelievably bonehead and selfish play at the end of the game when it mattered most. I mean, he stole that ball from P.J. Tucker. How often do you see that? guy's sitting there at the wing and he's cheating over, anticipating the corner pass.
Today in the NBA, it's all about spacing. You should not be standing right on top of your teammate.
Exactly. That's why I was watching. I was like, he stole that damn ball on purpose. He was not going to give it up. And then he dribbles over and fadeaway chunk three from the corner. It's like, what are you doing there? And then James Harden, guys, help me out. Help me. You got higher basketball IQ than me. What is going on with James Harden? That dude is in a slump of all slumps. For as magnificent as he was early in the season, Mark, he is just 1 of 17. It's the last stat, and then I want you to try to tell me what's going on with him. This came up last night across my Twitter feed, and I had to screenshot it because I thought you guys would enjoy it. This is from Stat Muse, which I had never seen a tweet from Stat Muse. But Stat Muse had a list of the most three-point misses in a game, okay? And last night is at the top, James Harden with 16. But then second most is James Harden with 16. That was January 8th of 2020. It was also James Harden with 16 three-point misses December of 19. It was also James Harden with 16 misses October of 19. And let's not forget last year, James Harden with 16 misses in March of 19 and 16 more January of 19. Damon Stoudemire also matched this feat of James Harden way back in April of 2005. But, Mark, the seven most missed three-point shots in a game belong to one man, and they've all come pretty much in the last 12 to 13 months. So we know James Harden is not afraid to fire it up, but, man, even when he's missing, he's still going to fire it up. This is crazy.
I think what you see is a little bit of role identification, and I don't know how people play with either Russell or James Harden. I think that once you get used to playing with Harden a little bit, you know you got to get to your spots on the floor, and at times he's going to kick it out to you. And again, I'm not saying these guys are bad basketball players, but they're really bad in the framework of a team. And it's difficult to find guys to put around them. With Russell right now, he's playing his best basketball. He's doing really well. I think it also is difficult, as we saw in Oklahoma City. You could bring in player after player after player. Victor Oladipo comes in and you think, hey, we got an all-star type guard to go with this team in Oklahoma City, and that's going to work well. And he had his worst season probably as a pro because it was difficult to play off of Russell. And so that team is going to have to figure it out. And I really do think, Dusty, I don't know how they're going to get rid of Russell, but I think at some point in time, that's going to be a discussion by the end of this year.
Good.
How do we replace him? What can we get to put? Because their franchise player is James Harden, and it's not Russell. I mean, and they did at times function well around Harden, but it was even look how good Chris Paul is this year. He's incredible. He was really good when he was with the Clippers, but he wasn't very good last year. He was kind of hurt, but it's tough to play with Harden because you have to stand around and wait for him to pass you the ball and watch him score or go get a rebound or go do something that's going to benefit the team, which is not based on traditional basketball type play. It's just tough. I mean, I don't think they could ever figure it out in Oklahoma City with Russell too well. I think it's one of the reasons why KD left for a team that was going to move the ball. And this Houston experiment, I think that they may continue to win some games and they'll get hot and James Harden will get his shot back. But I don't think that they're going to be able to win in the playoffs.
You said before the year you thought it would be a grease fire, and I tried to get you to you know, give me a definition of what grease fire is, but I think that this four-game stretch is kind of that illustration, right? And again,
the end of last night's game was a grease fire. That's what I would say was a grease fire.
I was going to say that had to be the low point of the Houston Rockets this year. Four-game losing streak, and to blow a 16-point fourth-quarter lead when Oklahoma City doesn't even have its first or second-team center, that's at home, by the way. That's one that's that's the grease fire that you so eloquently illustrated you expected before the season started. It was on display last night.
I think when you sit in an NBA locker room, those are all guys with big egos, and those are all guys that are unbelievably talented at basketball. I mean, like, they've been the best player on their college team. They were the best player growing up on their AAU team. And when you constantly see a guy coming back with a box score that says 4 of 20 from 3 or 1 of 17 from 3, and you want to win and you want to sustain your career, you got to be shaking your head at that.
Right? I agree a lot with what Caron Butler says, which is people don't want to sign up to play track. You're signed to play basketball, not run track. So when people are out there just spacing the floor, standing around, absolutely. I mean, you can speak to what James Harden does individually or what's causing his slump, but it's definitely affecting his teammates, the style of ball.
No question. There's no question. Danilo Gallinari, Mark. Now, he didn't play Saturday, but he did knock down seven threes on Friday. He was back last night, slow start, but boy, was it a fantastic finish. Think what, knocked down three threes in the fourth, and then he had the three free throws on a fouled three-point shot. That's a big piece of what got Oklahoma City back in it. He continues to shoot it well, and I just continue to wonder how much longer this guy's going to be on the team. I mean, it's great when he plays well and you're winning games, but isn't that just up in the ante, increasing his value or potentially the likelihood that somebody's going to step up and throw a big-time offer at Sam Presti for him?
It's a good question. Like, on a team that's real good right now, where would he fit? He fits more to me on a team that's going to try to, like, maybe in the East is going to try to make the playoffs, or somebody that needs someone to get over the hump. Because I think, yeah, if you give him free reign in Oklahoma City because he's a real, you know, outside threat, shot, number of shots he puts up isn't a concern. So it's kind of it's a fine mix of where can he go that's a team that can really use him, that wants to give up enough to make it worthwhile for Oklahoma City to get rid of him. Because the more and more this team plays, guys, I don't know. I mean, somebody else gets kind of a catastrophic injury in the West, then this team may go up and up and up in the standings.
I hope this team is as much as, I don't know if it's the best decision for the future, but I'm on board with keeping this team together and seeing what they can do. This team's too much fun to watch, man. They're playing too well. I mean, I want to see what it looks like through the duration of the season, and particularly in the postseason. I don't know if that's going to happen. I have my reservations that's going to happen, but I find it fascinating. This what's the date, Matt Ravis? February what?
6th, I believe.
February 6th. So tick tock, clock's ticking.
It's getting close. And again, if you're Sam Presti, this shouldn't be a difficult decision. If it's a move that's going to make the franchise better for the long term, then you make the deal. If you don't have a deal out there that makes sense to you, then you keep him and you don't worry about doing anything other than a sign and trade at the end of the year. Or, you know, you offer him a contract that you can afford. See if he wants to come back and run it back.
That would be an outstanding option as well. But what a wild comeback yet again for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Is the stat that Craig had, I'll make sure my headphones are working right. Did he say that Oklahoma City has had 12 fourth quarter come from behind victories this year, Mark? That's remarkable. What did he say, 9 all of last year for the Thunder? Think about that. You're at the midway point essentially right now, and you've got 12. I mean, and again, I think it goes back to what you said a lot of is, especially in clutch situations and crunch time, you got to play good. You got to play team basketball, right? You can't just go ISO ball. And I think that that's been on display and worked splendidly for this Thunder basketball team so far. But 12 fourth quarter come from behind victories, and we're talking like some all time comebacks. And then what we saw yesterday afternoon was just was off the charts, man, off the charts.
It was great. Okay, we got a lot of stuff coming up on the show today. We're going to visit with Joel Blumenthal, local product, played his high school football at Deer Creek, and he's going to be playing in the CFL. So he's had really kind of a interesting backstory and a long road to getting to professional football. We're going to take some phone calls today. We stopped to get into the Oklahoma-Baylor game last night, which is a good effort. Texas football, you thought that was bad. Wait till you see what's going on with
Hold
Texas basketball.
Beer.
That is an absolute hold my beer. So all that and more, but Dusty, first, tell us what's going on at Preferred Roofing.
Great things at Preferred Roofing always. 7127 Northwest 39th Expressway. It's Oklahoma's go-to commercial and residential roofing contractor since 1993. Well over 25 years servicing the Oklahoma City Metro and really the entire state of Oklahoma. Bill Feel and his family are fantastic people with a great product. They stand behind their work 100%. And hey, you want to save yourself some money? Ask about Preferred's work with impact-resistant shingles. Great savings to your homeowner's policy. Please get the job done right the first time and call my team at Preferred Roofing 405-792-2222. As Mark mentioned, Deer Creek product and getting ready for a CFL season. We talk with Joel Blumenthal next on the Monsters of the Midday.
The Morning Animals.
So, Kerry, get this. We were hiking for hours. I mean, I'm sweating.
Play football in Canada with the Toronto Argonauts. A day with football is better than a day without football. We're going to have some Canadian football coming up. First thing I got to ask you, Joel, as I go way back with your dad. He used to call the station all the time. I've been doing this forever. And so did you ever get sick of having to listen to the Sports Animal as a kid?
You know, to be honest with you, no. But, you know, he's we don't not talk about it as much, you know, right now. It was fun. You know, I definitely know, you know, remember those days.
Joe, talk to me. Walk our listeners through your story and to get to where you've gotten. Walk us back to the various schools you went to, Northwestern State, then SWASU. You were at OU Pro Day last year. So, I mean, you've had quite the winding road to get to professional football. So what's this adventure been like for you, Joe?
Well, you know, I started out at Deer Creek, and, you know, I played quarterback. And, you know, back then you weren't going to convince me that I wasn't going to, you know, go play Division I football at quarterback. And so I went to Butler Community College right out of high school, and I was there for a year and a half. And then I ended up going to FCS Northwestern State and played quarterback for about 2 years. I got hurt my junior year at Northwestern State. I tore my SE joint in my collarbone. And at that point, I just decided to leave there and go to SWASU. And so I went there, and actually my first season there at SWASU, I broke my finger in my throwing hand. So I ended up having the medical red shirt for the full year, and then last year, and I finished up, and I kind of knew at that point that with, you know, a shoulder injury and, you know, a hand injury, I wasn't throwing the ball quite the same, so I kind of knew at that point that I was going to make a switch to receiver, and then, you know, then, it, you know, I was training last off season, you know, to prepare for pro day, and I ended up getting a blessed with the opportunity to get into OU's Pro Day, and now here we are.
So you did really well at that Pro Day. I mean, tell me, did something click for you physically or mentally with the game? Because clearly you've shown a lot of resilience and persistence to stick with it through all of those different places and injuries that you battled through. But tell me how it led to you performing as well as you did at OU.
Well, that just goes back preparation. I was really prepared for that day. You know, I had been throwing with Kyler for about a month and a half before Pro Day, because I was training in Dallas. And where I was training was actually in McKinney, Texas, which is about 10 minutes from Allen. And he was in Allen, you know, throwing every day with his dad and the receiver. So once we found out I was getting into OU's Pro Day, I linked up with him. And you know, it just goes back to, you know, that I knew that was my one, you know, having the career that I had, you know, I knew that that was my one shot to open eyes and get the opportunity that I felt like, you know, I worked for my whole life. And so I was just ready, and I was definitely extremely prepared.
Explain to the listeners how playing quarterback, just the mental state that you have to be in and understanding a defense at quarterback helps you at the wide receiver position.
It helps me tremendously. I mean, knowing at quarterback, you know, you got to know what every single guy on the field has to do at all times, you know, from the line with the protection, who they're picking up, you know, from what every receiver is running to the running back, and then your responsibility and how you respond to what the defense does. You know, as a quarterback, you normally get, you know, you have pre-snap reads, and that can change immediately as the ball snaps, depending on what the defense does. So as a receiver, that helped me early on, being able to jump right in kind of any position, because I knew, when I was at Southwestern, because I knew, you know, what everybody was supposed to do already. And, you know, being able to read the coverage, read the defense, that's something that really helped me early on, just being able to already naturally know how to read and react to what the defense is doing, and then just go make the play.
So tell me about Canada. What do you think about playing for the Argonauts, the differences in the game that it is here in the United States, and what do you expect your role to be there?
First off, I'm really excited. I knew that CFL would possibly be a route that I would have to take if I wanted to play professional football. But they told me that they like me as, you know, Wildcat quarterback and wide receiver. So I'll get to.
Are you Taysom Hill, kind of?
I mean, they didn't use that word for word, but that's kind of what they're thinking about as far as how they want to use me. They definitely want to use me in, you know, all different packages to be able to run the ball back there. If they load the box because they see me in there, they know I can throw it as well. And they want to get me out there at receiver and just let me go play football.
Have you been to Canada before? Do you know exactly what to expect? And are you ready for the massive city that is Toronto?
Hold on. This is a perfect person to ask this. Joel, in your opinion, is Toronto or Dallas the bigger, more metropolitan city?
Well, you know, to be honest, to be completely honest with you, I haven't been to Toronto yet.
We have to let us know when you get there to spend some time in Toronto, because that's a long-standing argument between Dusty and I.
Joel, this is a hill that Mark is going to die on, okay? He's been proven wrong so many times, yet he refuses to admit defeat. So just be careful out there. Toronto, I can tell you, is a big city. So when does camp start? When do you report? Kind of what's the rundown, and what are you going to do in preparation to get yourself ready for when you do get that chance at camp?
Right now camp starts in May. I talked with the athletic trainers, and Toronto is still in the process of hiring an offensive coordinator. But I've talked to the head coach, and camp starts second week of May. And so right now, like, they fly us out about 5 days before. Right now, I'm just, training, and doing all I can to prepare to make sure I'm ready for that when that comes.
Now, your coach is Ryan Dinwiddie, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Dusty, didn't he play with the Bears maybe right around your time? A little bit before you, maybe 1 year?
Dinwiddie sounds familiar, but I don't know.
Yeah, he's
college, there, he played Boise State.
Yeah, he's been in the CFL for a minute now. He was with the Calgary Stampeders, and he's done a really good job with quarterbacks over there. So,
hey Joel, and I'm sure you tried, but XFL is firing up here in a couple of weeks, and I don't know if you tried to get in that or you just want to go the CFL route. But how good is it, and how much do you appreciate the fact that there are beginning to be other alternatives outside of the NFL to continue playing football at the next level here within this country? And we'll see exactly what the XFL looks like and how much it's embraced. But I just like the fact that they're trying, because I feel like there's so many young men out there just like you that want to continue to play football, but there's just not the avenue here inside this country. And that's why I'm really hopeful that this XFL takes off. It works. And there's the opportunity for guys to continue to keep playing football here in America.
No, absolutely. I had a workout with, XFL Dallas, Coach Stoops. And that was, it was obviously a very good experience. They end up, not picking me in the draft, but still, talked to the receiver coach and had a good relationship with him in the process. It's really, it opens up so many just opportunities for guys that are very talented players. I mean, the NFL is obviously a very cutthroat league. I mean, and new guys come in, 500,000 new guys come in every year for them to choose from. So to have another avenue here in the States, like the XFL, to, get film, create opportunities, is, it's huge for a ton of guys.
Hey, Joel, we appreciate your time, man. We'll be watching for you in Canada, and thank you so much. Check in with us again, man. We'd like to talk again and see how the season's going.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joel.
Right, appreciate it.
Much appreciated. Hey, I've been seeing great stuff right there. Appreciate you getting Joel for us there, Matt Ravis. I've been checking out quite a bit of on my social media feed. Bob Stoops has been tweeting a lot of different pictures from joint practices as they're getting fired up for this XFL season. And I don't know if you've had a chance yet, Mark, to take a look at any of the rules, but I think that this league's going to be fascinating, man. I really think it's going to draw some intrigue.
No extra points. We need to go over some of those rules because it is going to be a lot different.
You can have 9-point plays, Mark. I mean, you can go for the touchdowns, obviously 6, but you can go for a 1-point conversion, a 2-point conversion, or a 3-point conversion. I mean, it's going to make games that would potentially have seemed as if the needs that are insurmountable maybe not feel that way. So, and then how about the running clock? I love the running clock aspect of it. They say that they want these games to be done between 2 hours and 2 hours and 15 minutes.
That's gonna blow your mind in terms of how long a football game lasts.
It's gonna be like a basketball game.
It will be hard for me to adjust to that length of time for a football game.
It's different. Different.
That's weird. Hey, tell me about Preferred Roofing.
Oh, well, great things at Preferred Roofing, always. 7127 Northwest 39th Expressway is their location. It's Oklahoma's go-to commercial and residential roofing contractor since 1993. Stand behind their work 100%. And if you're looking to save money on your homeowner's policy, ask Preferred about their work with impact-resistant shingles. Everyone should have a quality roof from Preferred, and my guys will beat any competitor's price on a comparable bid. Get the job done right the first time. Call my team, the pros here at Preferred Roofing, 405-792-2222. That's 405-792-2222. The Senior Bowl is fired up and rolling in Mobile, Alabama. Jalen Hurts had a unique helmet. We'll discuss it next.
This is your Oklahoma City Thunder All Access Pass, sponsored by
Perfect Organization.
I was shocked this morning, as I do most mornings. I was listening to the award-winning Morning Animals. Fantastic job as always, boys. But I was flummoxed, Mark, because Curtis Fitzpatrick was beside himself. He hated this, and he hated it so much that initially Spinozzi was like, who cares? By the end of it, Spinozzi was outraged. Like, I don't get it. Like, who cares? I mean, it's the Senior Bowl. I've played in it. Nobody gives a damn what helmet you wear, I can assure you. And Jalen Hurts had a very unique career. I mean, the dude went 26-2 at Alabama, won multiple SEC championships, played in multiple national championship games, actually started a national championship they won. I know Tua came in the second half and led them to the victory, but Jalen Hurts gets accredited with national championship winning starting quarterback. I mean, so we can't act as if his Alabama career didn't happen. It didn't exist. It's very much a part of who he is. And while at the same time, you can't overlook or forget about what he did at Oklahoma, finishing second in the Heisman Trophy race, leading him to another Big 12 championship, and back to the college football playoff. I would say a helmet without both logos, iconic logos, will be selling Jalen Hurts' career short. Like, I don't get it. I loved it. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was well done by Rydell and the Senior Bowl to throw that thing together, because Jalen Hurts just completed one of the most unique college football starting quarterback careers we've ever seen in college football. One of the most unique careers we've ever seen. And therefore, I think it only makes sense to have a very unique helmet and one that we haven't necessarily seen the Senior Bowl before. But that was great.
It's a little bit of a marketing approach for Rydell, which is great. But hey, once the transfer portal opened, Dusty, you had to open yourself up to thruples and a lot of different other things, maybe even more than that. I mean, because there's going to be guys that have allegiances to different schools. And it should be no threats on Oklahoma. No threats on Oklahoma fan that they had to share him with Alabama, or that Alabama basically spent most of his career competing there and won a national championship there to come to Oklahoma.
That's right. Like, I mean, both places, and I think they should embrace him and embrace it. And I think it's kind of cool, man. I mean, those are two of the – we talk about the big boy table of major college football. They're at the big boy table. Those two logos, those two iconic, tradition-rich programs. And he got to lead both of those places to big-time success, right? I mean, again, I can't think of another quarterback that's had a path like Jalen Hurts. So, I don't know. I thought it was well done. I thought it was cool. Like, what would have made more sense? Let me ask you this, Mark. What would have made more sense if he had to just have one logo? Who do you identify Jalen Hurts with more? As the Alabama starting quarterback or the Oklahoma starting quarterback?
That's a good question to me, man. I don't know. He spent more time at Alabama, but he spent the last time at Oklahoma. So what's fresh in your memory? I think it's a toss-up either way. I would certainly tell you that I don't think it's any good for him, Jalen Hurts, to try to profess I'm one or the other. I mean, and I'm sure he's got the most sense about it than anybody else because I don't think it mattered to him. You know what I'm saying? That's just part of where he played his final season and where he played the three previous seasons.
Totally agree. I hate to even pigeonhole him in and try to identify him with one program or the other because his story is both. And that's who he is. But I mean, I will just say he spent 3 years at Alabama as a starting quarterback, went 26-2, and he got his degree from Alabama. I mean, I think he's Alabama through and through, but what he was able to do at Oklahoma this year, step in, take over this football team, cannot be overlooked, and it shouldn't be. And the Senior Bowl made sure that neither of his stops were. Here's a little bit of what Jalen said yesterday as he took the podium, kind of exactly what you were pointing out, Mark. Quote, "I don't think there is any experience that I would go back and exchange or change. Everything has happened for a reason. It's all happened as it's supposed to. I think I'm stronger, wiser, a better man, player, leader for everything." As we'd expect, well said there by Jalen Hurts yesterday in Mobile, Alabama.
Okay, so I watched a bunch of basketball yesterday. I told you that, right? But I also watched you.
So what are you watching me?
All three of us are now currently watching the same Netflix show.
Oh, you mean the show? I thought you just meant you were some creeper in the shrubs and you were watching me as in you. I didn't know you meant the show.
Not watching you, but the show you. And when it was described to me, I thought, I don't know, this seems a little, not that the descriptions were bad, but I'm just saying but the show is good. It's got me sucked in. No spoilers, please.
I just finished, it's funny you mentioned that, just because last night after watching quite a bit of basketball myself and the kids finally go to bed, we put on the season two of You, and it turned into a binge fest last night on a Monday. I hate to admit it, but I was up, my wife and I were up way too late. We had all kinds of good intentions to get to bed at a good hour, then all of a sudden, one episode went by, and we had to keep going. Another episode went by. Well, you can't stop there. Another episode and another episode until finally last night. We have finished season two of You. And all I can tell you, Mark, is season two is better than one and is a cliffhanger finish in season two. So get ready. Strap in. It's going to be a wild ride. I will say we're about to start a show that you've already started, The Outsider. I believe that's supposed to get underway tonight. So I'm trying. And then the other one that popped up last night after we finished season two, and you guys have told me about off the air, I'm going to check out this the Aaron Hernandez story. Is that worth viewing?
It did not move as quickly as you did for me. But Ravis and I will catch up with you. I would also like to report, Dusty, that the Bachelor last night was very, very trivial. Not much of anything happened. They still cannot get over the champagne being drunk. I think they were trying to make a couple other girls look crazy last night, as the show would do. But really, nothing to see there on The Bachelor last night.
Man, I don't even know how I could fit in The Bachelor with all this basketball going on, multiple Netflix series. I'm just going to sit back, relax, and allow you and my wife to keep me updated. If there's anything that I must see, just let me know. I'll be sure to tune in. But until we get that point, I'm going to let you do the advanced scouting for me.
Okay,
you're my advanced.
That's perfectly fine.
You're my advanced scout. Thank you, Marcus.
I got you back.
Hey,
tell me about Preferred Roofing.
I will, but hang on. Before I tell you about it, I do want to mention this, because we were talking about the Senior Bowl and a couple things off the Senior Bowl. One, Jalen Hurts I was thinking about this, and it's interesting that you asked our guest, Joe Blumenthal. I would be surprised if we don't see Jalen Hurts in that similar role to the way the Saints have used Taysom Hill, right? I mean, wouldn't that make sense to you? Like, I just don't know if I see a future for Jalen Hurts as a pure NFL quarterback. But I think the guy is a great leader, excellent worker. I just think he's a guy that you would want in your locker room, and I think he's a hell of a football player. Like, there's physicality to him. There's high football IQ. And I'm just wondering if teams, like, has Taysom Hill potentially opened up a door for certain players that maybe aren't the truest, greatest pocket passers, but they've got size, they've got athleticism, they've got football IQ, and if they're willing, I think Taysom Hill has shown that there's a spot if organizations, you know, want to utilize some versatility, step out of their comfort zone, there's a role for players like that, and I just wonder if that's the way some team might potentially look at Jalen Hurts.
I really agree with that. It's in a sense to a point, because I think it's ironic that Breeze and Hill are on the same team, because inevitably every short white quarterback gets compared to Drew Breeze, and that's not fair because there's not any of them. And I think Taysom Hill is like such a Swiss Army knife. I can't see a quarterback playing the role that he plays on special teams. Maybe they could. I mean, but quarterbacks, Dusty, you might know this, or maybe sometimes tend to be a little more fragile. Jalen Hurts doesn't fit that bill. But I think if you can do multiple things on a roster and you can be good enough to throw a pass, play the wildcat, all those things that he does, I think that's pretty difficult to do. Or there'd be more of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's yes, there probably would be. But it's also, like, I'm just going to go Tim Tebow. Like, he wanted to be quarterback, right? Like, he didn't want to be an H-back. He didn't want to chip in on special teams. He wanted to show he could play quarterback. That's what he wanted to do. Whereas, you know, Taysom Hill, I have to go back and look. I don't think he was drafted. It was like, what do I, you know, this guy's just like frothing at the mouth. What can I do to make a roster? You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. So I think his mindset was different than maybe a Tim Tebow's. And I'm just, like, Jalen Hurts just strikes me as the type of guy that's going to do whatever he can do to get on the field. And I'm going to find it interesting because I think he's going to get drafted. Again, I think that the football player aspect to him is too great not to want him somewhere on your roster. And I think that he could provide some versatility. That's why at the Senior Bowl in particular, will they ask him to do some different things? Will he just be there playing quarterback? I think as we get a chance to watch practice and see what the NFL coaches potentially see in Jalen Hurts or might have in store, I find that intriguing as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft. And about the NFL draft, Matt Ravis came across an unbelievable nugget. I'm going to tell you about next hour. This NFL draft, it's in Vegas. And you know what they do in Vegas? They do it big, baby. They're doing it big for this year's NFL draft. We'll explain to you exactly what we mean coming up next hour. But as you mentioned, Mark, I am at Preferred Roofing today. It's 7127 Northwest 39th Expressway, Oklahoma's go-to commercial and residential roofing contractor since 1993. They stand behind their work 100%, and if you're looking to save some money on your homeowner's policy, be sure to ask about Preferred's work with impact resistant shingles. Everyone should have a quality roof from Preferred. My guys will beat any competitor's price on a comparable bid. Be sure to get the job done right the first time with my team at Preferred Roofing, 405-792-2222. Hour number one is in the books. Much more straight ahead on the Monsters of the Midday.
The Thunder are in Orlando looking to beat the Magic tomorrow night at 6 on ESPN.
On the road at number one, Baylor Bears home there in Waco. Mark, they almost pulled one out of the fire there. Down 9 with just a couple of minutes to go, but a couple of late threes, one by Reeves, one by Brady Manick, set up for a steal, and you heard the call right there from Bob Wischusen. Austin Reeves in the corner. He had a good look, had to rush it maybe just a touch with the Baylor defender closing out, but as it's gone, unfortunately, quite a bit this year, the three does not go down for Austin Reeves and the Sooners. Though you applaud the effort and the comeback, it was in a losing effort, and the Baylor Bears survive and advance once again. I believe 15 straight wins now for Baylor.
It was an impressive performance by OU, but they just didn't get it. They did not get it done. So that's not going to help them. And I don't think with the NCAA in terms of the selection committee, if you win that game, it's huge for you. The Sooners are going to have to get some wins against people that are good at some point in time in the season to strengthen their resume for the NCAA tournament. But I didn't think Baylor was at its best last night. They're a really good team, though. That's a team that's capable of winning the national championship.
Yes, they are. I like the overall. I like the depth of the team. I really like Freddie Gillespie and his toughness. He had 15 boards last night, and they've got guys that can make shots. Though he didn't light it up last night. I think Jared Butler, really nice player for them. Mark, he struggled last night shooting it, but typically this year he's been really good.
No, I mean, they can hit you from all those different guys. I mean, Maceo Teague is good. Bandu won the Oklahoma State game by hitting some big shots. And so they have depth in the backcourt. That's really impressive. And then they've got some guys that can play and get things done inside, and they hustle and they try and they're athletic. And that's a good team. It's a really good team.
Put your coaching whistle on, please. Can you do that for me?
Sure.
You got it on?
Yeah.
All right. Now, I want you to play the role of Lon Kruger, okay?
All right.
What's your messaging? How do you approach Austin Reeves? This is a guy who, coming in to Oklahoma, obviously set out last year, but prior to that, I mean, Mark, he shot 42.5% 17-18, and though a much smaller percentage, usage, he shot over 50% his first year at Wichita State. He's shooting under 25% this year. So how do you approach that situation with a guy, a junior in Austin Reeves, who you couldn't wait to get eligible, you couldn't wait to get on the floor? He's had some ups and downs, but for the most part has shot it very poorly from three, and it did again last night. What are you doing? When you set him down, what are you saying, Coach Rogers?
It scared me a little bit because you got to worry about everybody wanting to go someplace different if you make them mad. But what I would do is I would pop in the tape of the game on Saturday and say, look, we're better when we move the ball and we create opportunities for everybody else. So we don't want to over dribble and we don't want to take bad shots. And for the love of all that's good, we're not James Harden on this team. All right. We're not going to shoot a bunch of step back threes. Okay. That's not a good shot for us. It's not a good shot in college basketball. If you're James Harden and you've played in the NBA for 10 years, that might be a good shot for you after you've shot it as many times as he has. But no, we need to move the ball around. We need to space the floor. We need to get inside. We need to take the ball to the basket on fast breaks. I'd like for us to get up into tempo more because we can stall some time in the half court. And, you know, let's shoot good shots, period. That's it. Let's take good shots. Let's not be a team of individuals. And I think that's a little bit of what we've seen with OU in the past couple of seasons, is that they've got to – now, the trick is those guys probably know that Baylor's a whole lot better at doing what they do to shut you down than TCU is. And so with the defensive teams in this league, Dusty, it's tough because they're going to force you to put you in some bad positions. But ball movement is what OU needs.
I like that. You got me motivated. We'll see if Lon Kruger can do the same with Austin Reeves in particular, and his continuing to shoot threes at such a high clip. As far as the Sooners go this year, Mark, Mississippi State in the Big 12 SEC showdown this weekend. Then next week at Kansas State and Oklahoma State comes to town. I could make a case they should be able to win these next three basketball games. Are they right squarely on the bubble right now? Is that where you see them as they sit 12-6 and 3-3 in league play? Are they, you know, as much a bubble team as anybody else you find?
TCU's up as their best win, right?
Well, I would, yeah, probably, yes. I think that's right.
I think that's it. I don't think the Mississippi State win is going to help them a ton because that's kind of a little bit in the same category as TCU. So
last night they got smacked, but they did win by 10.
Texas is not a good team. I mean, they don't have a bad record, but they're going to get crushed in this league. They can't score. I don't know. They need to win these games. They really do. And then they can't end up the year, say, like 1-7 against West Virginia, Kansas, Tech, and Baylor.
Find a way to win a couple of those games.
Find a way to have some quality wins, right? Because I think if the committee looks at that, they'll go against the best competition they face. They were 1-7 or 2-6, and that's not going to be good enough. So if they can find a way to win some of those games, I think that they'll stop. They still have an absolute chance to get in. Last night would have been huge for him, though.
Close, but no cigars, they say, for Oklahoma again as they fall by four on the road. You referenced that team down in Austin. They were in Morgantown last night. And I think that as much as any highlight I could play for you, I think this highlight kind of illustrates what went down in Morgantown.
Jones threw it away. Look at Shibway hustling to get it back. Oh, my. And the smile from Shibue on the way down. My goodness.
Oh.
He ran 94 feet to get the ball and then finished with a slam.
No defense anywhere for the Longhorns. Shibue, it was like one man was on the floor. Nobody went down there to try to get the ball. Nobody mustered up any kind of defense. Mark, 97-59. Texas got beat by 38 last night. 38? Wow. It's got to be a low point for Shaka Smart. That's a bad L. Bad
L. It was, and it was a bad time to be facing West Virginia after they had one of their worst performances of the season at Kansas State. I mean, so, you know, that big Monday game, if you played bad on Saturday, you get to go back right out there at home. Like, again, I said I was really disappointed that Oklahoma State didn't find a way to beat Texas. Really, that was... That was poor on their home floor. But Shaka Smart is done. That's the kind of loss that buries you.
That's what I was
National
thinking.
Television. It's just it hadn't
the
gotten there.
The announcers were laughing about it. Did you hear them? They were laughing about the lack of competitiveness from Texas last night. I mean, it was It's embarrassing. That was an embarrassing L for Shaka Smart and the Longhorns. All right, action tonight in college basketball. Can Oklahoma State, as an Iowa State team that's only won one game in Big 12 play, they're 8-9 in the season, can they get their first win in Big 12 play tonight in Ames? Will they?
No, not there. I don't think so. I think that's going to be really hard. I don't see it. I don't see it up there. I mean, they just have to – Iowa State's not great, but that's a tough environment, and the fans show up, so I think it's unlikely.
Well – they need to start finding a place to get wins at some point. I don't know what else to say. I mean, you know, 0-5 to start Big 12 play. There's plenty of motivation, and there were signs of at least improvement for probably the first 30 minutes of that game against Baylor on Saturday. We'll see if that can manifest itself into a win tonight in Ames. But Oklahoma State still searching for their first Big 12 victory and trying to get out of that low rung on the totem pole in the Big 12 standings. A little bit of college basketball from last night and what you have to look forward to tonight. Kansas State at Kansas, Texas Tech at TCU, and as we mentioned, the Cowboys in Ames, Iowa against Iowa State. We've talked a lot about the Oklahoma City Thunder today, and their come-from-behind win, down 16 in the fourth, no problem. They outscore the Rockets by 21 in the fourth quarter. Here's what I want to do. A couple more topics I want to get to here. I want to take phone calls next segment, so fill them up if you'd like to jump in now. We can go ahead and start those right now. But I definitely want to hear from some of you guys fired up about the Thunder. I want to hear from some Sooner fans on the Jalen Hurts thing. Are people actually upset with the split helmet, Oklahoma and Baylor? If so, I'd love to hear why. I'll hear you out. I will hear you out. But I want to hear why that might perturb you. 460-9957, 460-WWLS is the number. If you'd like to jump in, I got two things in football I want to touch on real quickly. First, we saw this earlier today. We've not touched on it yet. The NFL Pro Bowl, Mark. They are going to have an alternative to the onside kick. That will be on display this coming weekend in the NFL Pro Bowl. And if you remember, this was thrown around, I believe, in the offseason by the Rules Committee. And they're going to actually put it into effect and see how it plays out in a real game. So what this means is after an offense or after a team scores, okay, they have the opportunity to either place the football at the 25-yard line with no kickoff, give it to the other team, or if they, instead of onside kicking it, they have the opportunity from the same 25, their own 25, to try to get 15 yards. Essentially, it's a 4th and 15. If they get the 15 yards, They keep the, they retain possession, they keep the football and continue the drive. If they don't get the 15 yards, the opposing team gets the football right there where they miss the line to gain. Too gimmicky, do you think after we see this play out in the Pro Bowl, this could potentially have any real legs in next year or in the future of the NFL and in football in general?
There is no good way to simulate the onside kick. It's a crazy part of the game. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's one of the most exciting plays in the whole sport. I mean, I can't tell you, I was watching the OU-Kansas State game this year at Land Run, bar across the street over here, and the place went insane when Oklahoma allegedly recovered that onside kick. So, I mean, one play, fourth down and 15, that's just another play. I don't think so. I think it's just really hard to do. I don't know. I mean, if kickoffs are too violent and collisions are too violent, that's a tough one to me to have to lose in the game of football. That'll be really sad. The targeting penalties don't bother me because I think that it is awful at any time in the sports, lower your head and hit somebody else in the head. But the kickoff, I want to keep it.
Matt Ravis, you down with this?
Down for getting rid of the onside kick?
Yeah.
Kickoff in general? No, it is just too crazy of a play. I'm kind of with you, Dusty. It would be very sad to see that go away.
I can't stand this. This drives me nuts. It's a kickoff, man. It's football. Like, are we going to rewrite the sport of football? Like, I don't understand this. This is too far for me. I don't like it at all. It's too gimmicky. 15, you get a chance on one play to get 15 yards, retain possession. I don't like any part of it. And I would still say, look, kickoffs are less violent than they have been in the past. And it's still one of the most exciting 8 to 10 seconds of football that you're going to find. And the kickoff is an exciting play if you watch. Yeah, there's some big collisions, but there's also big returns. And I just think that there's game-changing type of opportunities in special teams. Like, we always talk about it's the constantly forgotten aspect of football that nobody pays attention to. Well, nobody's really going to pay attention to it if we're just going to get rid of kickoffs. I don't like this, Mark. I don't like the aspect of the onside kick. I mean, it's interesting because I remember a game this season, it might have been on Thanksgiving, when the announcers were going on and on. Was it Romo or whoever it was going on and on about how they might as well just do away with the onside kick because they never get them. And then that night, I think it was the Saints-Falcons game. They get two onside kicks in the same game. So I don't know, Mark. For me, I wish they'd leave this alone. I understand promote player safety. I'm all about it. But I do not want to see them get rid of the kickoff. I just think that that's still such an important and, for me, entertaining part of the sport. And the aspect of the onside kick, though it's difficult, you still have the opportunity. Feels to me like this is very similar to, you know, putting a runner on second base in extra innings in Major League Baseball. No, thank you. Too gimmicky for me, Mark. I don't like it.
I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can either. I agree.
Well, they're going to do it. It's going to be the NFL Pro Bowl coming up this weekend. Obviously, that's an exhibition, but there will be a lot of people with watchful eye keeping an eye on exactly how that little experiment goes coming up this weekend. All right, last thing as far as the NFL goes. Matt Ravis brought this to my attention, and I find it fascinating, but I can't say that I'm overly excited about this. So the NFL draft this year, by the way, was just fantastic last year in Nashville. So what's better than Nashville? Vegas, baby, right? Vegas, new team, new stadium. They want to get the buzz going. It's easy to get any buzz going in Las Vegas. The NFL draft is going there coming up in April. And Arash Markazi tweeted out earlier a rendering of what the NFL draft stage is going to look like. And let me paint the picture for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be on the water at the fountains of Bellagio. That's right. You know, the big fountains that go up in the air, that's where the draft stage is going to be. And the players will be transported to the stage by boat. Like, to me, this is one of those things, sounds cool in theory, but the execution, I think, is going to be crucial. and deciding if this is a success or a failure. And I got to be honest with you, as kind of outside the box thinking and very Vegas-esque, if you will, as this is, grand stage on the fountains of Bellagio. I mean, it sounds amazing, right? I fear that this boat thing is going to take way too long. It's going to throw off the timing, and we're going to be sitting here going, this is ridiculous. This is stupid. So, again, on one hand, I applaud them for trying to be original, but on the other, I just think that executing this is going to be a little bit difficult, and I see a huge chance for failure more so than I do success.
Okay, I'm looking at the rendering. And so there has to be a way that you could get through that plank where you wouldn't have to take the boat.
Is that
so
that,
you could walk out there?
That walkway right there?
That walkway right there, I think, though. I'll tell you what, other than I cannot, I agree with you 100%. I don't want to be waiting while the boat rolls up. And the last time I was in Vegas, they were cleaning the track that goes on that deal. So there was not a whole lot of a Bellagio water show to be seen. But if it goes okay, that's a pretty amazing setting. But are you going to just close down Las Vegas Boulevard and put everybody?
I don't know.
That's going to be really crowded in that area.
That's going to be wild. But that's what's on tap. So get your popcorn ready for this year's. And Nashville hit it out of the park last year, I thought, Mark. I mean, I thought that was as cool a venue as I've seen for the NFL draft. It's going to be tough to top that, even in Las Vegas. And maybe that's why they're trying with this setting at the fountains of Bellagio. But that was pretty cool. Matt Ravis, nice find from Arash Markazi. By the way, 460-9957 is the number. We'd love to talk to you. We can go anywhere in the world of sports you'd like to go. Give us a call here on the Monsters of the Midday. 460-9957 is the number, and I'm here today at Preferred Roofing, 7127 Northwest 39th Expressway, Oklahoma's go-to commercial and residential roofing contractor since 1993. They stand behind their work 100%. If you're looking to save money on your homeowner's policy, be sure to ask Preferred about their work with impact-resistant shingles. Get the job done right the first time. Call my team, the pros, at Preferred Roofing, 405-792-2222. Want to talk to you? Fill them up, 460-9957. Talk to us on the Monsters of the Midday.
Sports Animal Soundbite.
Part of my research, you know who's actually done okay at clutch time this year?
In Houston yesterday on MLK Day, 112-107, as good a comeback and as quality a win, all things considered, with Steven Adams out, with Steven Adams getting hurt at the beginning of the game, Nerlens Noel out, no bigs, no problem. Thunder take down the Houston Rockets for the second time here this month. We're taking your phone calls this segment. 460-9957 is the number. You want to talk to the Monsters, feel free to jump in. Brian, we'll get you started first. You're off the Monsters. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Dustin. And guys, hey, this may sound ridiculous, but on the kickoff, the new NFL rules, how about putting weight limits on certain special teams players? Or maybe a linebacker can't weigh more than 230 or 220, et cetera, et cetera.
Hey, a 175-pound guy hitting a 175-pound guy is going to cause just as much damage. I mean, if you take a direct hit to the head, I don't think I appreciate the theory and the thought there, but I don't think that's going to help the violence of it.
I think here's the thing, Brian. I hear what you're saying, and this is like, you know, the fat kid in me hates this because, you know, there are certain places where you can't play running back if you weigh a certain amount of weight. Like, it's like, if you're a bigger person, then they hold it against you type of thing. But I think what Mark's trying to say is the issue with kickoff is the fact that you've got guys sprinting 20 to 30 yards and then coming head to head with big collisions. Regardless of how small the player is, they're still going to have the ability to sprint and still have those big collisions. So I don't, I don't think that that's going to completely save anybody.
Kind of where it looks like it may be going.
It's they're definitely doing everything that they can to get rid of the kickoff. No question, incentivizing where you get the football, I would still say that just the fact to have the option to be able to return the football, I think it's just still such a it makes you have to prepare and in practice. It makes you have to really be focused and dialed in the game. And I just, even though I understand that that play comes with big collisions, I think that it's, to me, it's too much of the fabric of what football is.
Appreciate it. I'm a first-time caller also.
We'll awesome. Get you some Johnnies, Brian. We appreciate it. I don't know how they would do that. Like so Brian's point, like say they say you can't weigh over 220 pounds. Well, what is that? Is that as of the day of the game? They're going to weigh all the 53, the 46 that dress on game day? And anybody that's over 220 or whatever the weight is, they can't play on special teams? I just don't know how you would legislate that. You know what I'm saying, Mark? I mean, he's right, though. Like, you know, obviously there's still going to be people running at high speeds. But if you reduce the size of the people, maybe that reduces how big the collisions potentially are. The first play I ever played in the National Football League was on kickoff. My first preseason game my rookie year. And I set the wedge. Wedges are no longer allowed in football. You can't have a wedge anymore. But we would set a three-man wedge. And my first ever play, I had a huge collision with a linebacker from the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, big collision. We both hit each other really hard. He knocked him out. He knocked out. He was out cold on the ground. And, of course, Dave Tobe, my special teams coach, he's a great job, great block. He was mad at me because I was really fired up and I didn't go get the next guy. But I've witnessed it firsthand, man. Those are – and if you've ever been in a NFL special teams meeting and you've watched – you know, some of the hits that you see on special teams, they're cringeworthy. But I do think that with, you know, not being able to put together a full wedge and just the different rules that they've implemented, it has made it a safer play, which is good. I really hope we don't ever see a day where kickoff doesn't exist at any level of football. That'd be a weird game to me. Look a little foreign.
That would be a sad day. Hopefully it doesn't happen. They've done a lot of things. You know, fair catch the football inside the 25-yard line. You move it out to the 25. I mean, they've made a lot of things to try to eliminate the contact. But kickoff is not the only violent play. I mean, there's a lot of other plays in the game that can be just as violent.
That's right. The only difference that is on kickoff is obviously you've got people running directly at one another, Braveheart style at really high speeds, you know what I'm saying?
Any turnover can kind of create that similar kind of situations. Now that the peel back block has kind of been outlawed, but that's where you see some of that. But if the field changes, guys can be changing direction pretty quickly, and they can get hit pretty hard, with guys running the opposite direction.
Didn't they change the distance between where the kickoff? I know that they made it to where you couldn't get that running start on kickoff.
Right? Only five yards.
Because it used to be you could get much more of a running start. So, again, they're trying to alter it and make it a safer play. I just think there's always going to be an element of that there's some violence. And I don't know. I guess call me barbaric. Call me old school, if you will. I guess I'm okay with that. 460-9957 is the number if you'd like to jump in. We'd love to talk to you. Steven, you're up next. Thanks for joining the show. You're on with the Monsters. Go ahead, Steven.
What's up, guys? Just want to say I love your show. You know, I've been a big fan of yours for years, Dusty. I also wanted to know what you guys feel about the defense for OU with all these transfers. I feel it might be a good thing, considering, you know, get some new blood in there and some taller guys to actually defend the pass instead of getting burnt on deep coverage.
Hey, Steven, thanks for the kind words. Really appreciate it. Thanks for giving us a call. Look, I think – I look at the transfers as I think it's pretty simple to me, Mark, and I don't know if I'm oversimplifying it, but these are a lot of guys that weren't playing at Oklahoma. I think they want playing time. And, you never want guys gone because that cuts into your depth, right? I mean, and as we see over the duration of an entire season, your depth is going to be challenged. And so you have to have guys that are capable, ready to step in when that depth is challenged. But as far as front-end talent, I don't think that any of these – guys transferring are that. And I'm not saying that it's coaches telling them they need to go elsewhere. I think that for a lot of these guys, Mark, they saw the writing on the wall. And they knew that if they wanted to get meaningful reps, potential to be a starter, they should probably go elsewhere. I don't look at it anything more than that. And I think that in 2020 in college football, the transfer portal is going to strike everywhere. This isn't an Oklahoma thing. It's all over the place. And I think that if you're a highly touted guy and you feel that for whatever reason you haven't gotten on the field but you could somewhere else, I think you should expect that we're only going to see more of this moving forward.
I think what has to happen at OU, Dusty, is that the defensive coaching staff has to do a better job of evaluating. The offensive coaching staff has raised the bar on that with their ability to recruit guys and go out and find players because they've got a reputation, Lincoln Riley, an offensive genius. But when you recruit guys that have to transfer after a couple of years, that's going to cause you a depth issue. But that's also a little bit on the evaluation process, because that's not what you want. You want guys who are going to come in here and get a chance to play, and if they get a chance to get out there, they're going to show some potential, and therefore I think they're going to want to still stay around, because it's not like OU's defense is the Clemson defense where you just can't get out of the off the sidelines and onto the field. Because I think a lot of these guys, especially at linebacker, they might have had a chance to get out there if they could play really well, you know, at least at some point in time. So I think that they've got to, and that's also the case to me in the secondary, they got to do a better job of evaluating that back there. I think that was a little bit of what the caller was trying to insinuate, is maybe some defensive backs that are a little bit taller that can play a little more physical brand of football. So I think that's a big challenge for Grinch and Odom.
And that's what Alex Grinch wants, and Roy Manning, who coaches the corners. And that's what they want. They want size, length, guys that can play man coverage, can challenge at the line of scrimmage. And, again, I'm not going to pretend to act like I know a ton about these recruits, but if you just look at their sizes, Mark, that's what they identified and they went after, right? Safety Washington, 6'2", 200 pounds. Cornerback Joshua Eaton, 6'2", 175. He's lean, but he's long. Justin Harrington, JUCO transfer, plays safety, 6'3", 215. Another corner who's over 6 foot, over 175. So they're identifying that. They've gone after, and that's what they're looking for. They want more size, definitely length. If you've listened to Alex Grinch at all, you know that he puts a premium on that. They addressed that in this first signing class, at least in December. I'm sure they're still trying to find whatever they can before February, but that's definitely the goal, no question. How long is it going to take to see that pay off? I don't know. We'll see. I know for Sooner fans, anybody that cares about Oklahoma defense, you're hoping sooner rather than later. Frank, let's get you in here. Thanks for calling. You're off the Monsters of the Midday. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, I enjoy your show. I get to hear it. Two things about going back a couple of calls ago about the size and weight of the guys running downfield hitting people. There's no doubt, I mean, it's indisputable that a smaller body is going to deliver a smaller hit than a bigger body going at the same speed. I mean, that's just fact. But I don't know how you enforce that. You know, there's it's be like a wrestler. They're all going to weigh 220 in the spring, and then by the time the game starts, they're going to weigh 265 or something, you know. So I don't know how you enforce it.
But let's say it's 100, and I'm with you. I'm in total agreement. But if it's a 100, and or let's say it's a 200-pound safety sprinting down, and there's a 210-pound wide receiver, right? I mean,
yeah.
There can still be, I mean, for that 200-pound person's body, if they're getting the blow delivered on them, I mean, that could still be a very high-impact play. So, I mean, it's not – is it less than a 250-pound body on a 255-pound body? I guess maybe.
It's a math equation. A 250-pound body moves slower than a 200-pound body or 170-pound body.
Well, it depends on which body you're looking at. Huh?
he's going to bring a harder hit. But that's my second point real quick, kind of a retro
throwback. That's why you're setting the wedge.
Kind of a retro throwback. If you're gonna get on the kickoffs, I'm gonna go back to Scott Case. I saw him just exactly what you're trying to describe. I saw him deliver it in my whole life. It always comes back to, I don't know how the guy got up, because I saw Scott Case come out of nowhere at OU and just blast this guy. And as you say, you know, he's just covering a pass and just whack this receiver like I've never seen anybody do it before. So I don't know how you do that either. It's just a violent game.
It is. Hey, thanks, Frank. We appreciate it. And you know what? And this is the rub. Here's the uncomfortable truth, okay? One of the things that I think myself and so many others love and gravitate towards football is because of that violence, right? It's just, there's something about it, man. There's something about that, the raw, violent aspect of football that we love, right? We just can't get enough of it. While at the same time, I think that we're in 2020, I think that we would all agree, we also want to be able to make it a safe game. And that's where I don't know how you can make everybody happy, Mark. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the rub to me. How and where does it stop? How do you get football to still be this violent, rugged game that people clamor for, while at the same time making it safe and a safe sport that moms and dads can feel comfortable allowing their 10, 11, 12-year-old to go out and play? And I'm sure they're trying to find that sweet spot, but that's the rub, and that's what I think everybody's trying to figure out. How far can we take it? You know, how many rules can we tweak to make it a safer sport? But and everybody would agree, you want it to be safe, but I think most people, if you really got down to brass tacks, one of the things that they love most about football is that violence, is that physicality. And I think if you get to a point where you completely take that out, you're going to lose a lot of the luster, a lot of the appeal that makes football such a great sport in this country.
Well, if you find that guy that can do that, then I'm going to immediately put him to work on how you can eat a half gallon of ice cream every day and still not get fat. Because, yeah, you're right. It's tough to please everybody. You can't do it that way.
No, you can't. We tried to right here on the Monsters of the Midday, though. Thanks for the calls. We very much appreciate them and the kind words. Here today, Preferred Roofing, 7127 Northwest 39th Expressway. It's Oklahoma's go-to commercial and residential roofing contractor since 1993. Stand behind their work 100%. And if you're looking to save some money in your homeowner's policy, be sure to give them a call and ask Preferred about their work with impact-resistant shingles. Get the job done right the first time. Call my team, the pros, here at Preferred Roofing, 405-792-2222. One more segment. Keep it right here on the Monsters of the Midday.
This is your Oklahoma City Thunder All-Access Pass, sponsored by...